Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life, and today we're talking about consumer eugenics.
This is a really, really important ethical topic that we're going to try to do some work in on this podcast over the course of this year. And we're actually teeing up a few podcasts to come where we're going to get a little deeper into some of the existential realities here. We're going to have some guests on the podcast. We're going to talk about some of their experiences. But what I want to do in this podcast, what we want to do today is just sort of raise this topic, consumer eugenics. What we're talking about here is the fast-growing industry of screening, selecting, and implanting human embryos. So it's sort of connected. This is, what do I want to say? It's adjacent to things like IVF and other reproductive technologies, but this part is really about sort of screening embryos for certain genetic traits. And this is fast picking up steam in our culture. It's quickly becoming the norm. And because of where technology is going, we think that it's going to be a present tense consideration for Christians in the years to come as we think about sort of bearing and raising children and just medical technology. So let me get us started by reading to you from an article by Christine Rosen. This is an op-ed written for the American Enterprise Institute, which is a think tank in Washington, D.C. that focuses on some policy-related issues. The title of the article is Silicon Valley's Consumer Eugenics. I'm going to read selections from this article. So these are now the words of Christine Rosen from April 21st, 2025. Orchid Health, she writes, is one of several Silicon Valley startups that want to revolutionize genetic testing and the fertility industry. Have healthy babies, its website commands. The drop-down menu under the word products includes embryo, a perfect representation of the company's view of human life. Orchid and other startups like it take embryos produced by IVF and subject those embryos to polygenic screening. This process produces a risk score, an estimation of the probabilities that an individual person once born will suffer from conditions such as obesity or depression that may be caused by variants in multiple genes. As a matter of fact, the interaction of these genes in many cases, such as in obesity and depression, is not well understood. For this reason, among others, the American College of Medical Genetics and Genomics has not approved polygenic screening for clinical use. The marketing materials of these companies are masterpieces of disingenuousness. They are thick with sentiment and vague appeals to health. Orchid Health founder Noor Siddiqui, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly, has produced a long X thread about the inspiration for her life's work. She is really doing all of this because of her own mother. Quote, "When I was in elementary school, my mom started going blind. No family history, no treatments, no cure," she wrote. "I got lucky, she didn't. It led me to build Orchid Inc. so my baby and everyone else's gets to win the genetic lottery, avoid blindness, and hundreds of severe genetic diseases." Sounds heartwarming.
Sounds very much like this one group in the 1930s and 40s that used to do stuff like
wow.
that.
Wow. Oh, you're getting ahead of us.
He went
wow.
there.
You're getting ahead of us.
Yeah.
That's where this is headed. Let me continue reading. Sounds heartwarming, but it's quite the opposite once you realize that what Siddiqui is building is not a company that can cure retinitis pigmentosa or other genetic diseases, but one dedicated to eliminating embryos that carry the genes associated with them. Her baby won't have retinitis pigmentosa because that baby will not be allowed to exist. Indeed, in the world Siddiqui is seeking to create, her mother would never have been born. And despite her efforts to cast herself as a modern-day Jonas Salk, hers is a service not available to everyone's babies, since the testing alone costs thousands of dollars in addition to the price of IVF, and is thus out of reach for most Americans. This is why in selling Orchid, the clear purpose of the sales pitch is to make parents feel that screening is not a choice, but an obligation. Under pictures of adorable babies produced by Orchid, Siddiqui asks, if you could prevent your child from going blind, would you? From getting pediatric cancer at 5? From heart defects? Schizophrenia at 22? From living a life radically altered by pure genetic bad luck? Only a monster would answer no to any of these propositions, as Siddiqui well knows. But what word would you use to describe a person who would offer the temptation to parents to deny a child life because said child might have heart defects that might be cured a decade after her birth? Siddiqui and her ilk are proposing a future in which sex is effectively decoupled from procreation in the name of health and safety. Sex is for fun. Embryo screening is for babies, Siddiqui says. We've always sought to protect our children. Embryo screening simply moves that protection earlier. The true moral question isn't whether we should use this technology, but whether we can justify withholding it when it could prevent needless sufferings, she adds. In 10 years, not screening your embryos will feel like not buckling your seatbelt. You liked that line, Dusty.
Well, it's very crafty writing, but not in her list of questions is, do you bow down to the idol of control? Setting aside the image-bearing obvious questions here.
Let me continue reading a few paragraphs. Siddiqui waves away the implications of her work. Let the debates rage, she says, we'll keep building. But Orchid and its fellow companies are not building anything. Instead, they are proposing to destroy nascent human life that fails to meet the acceptable health outcomes listed on spreadsheets. All while they wink at what they are really selling, bespoke child making. They are also enthusiastically destroying an ethical consensus in this country that has tenuously held for some time. The idea that playing God with the human genome is a dangerous thing to do, with likely serious unintended consequences. And they are lying to their customers, to whom they are promising they have powers of prediction that they do not yet possess. Reproduction as quality control has a long and dark history, but the enthusiasm around new reprotech companies suggests younger generations have never learned it. Younger Americans have spent their lives saturated in technologically mediated worlds that produce seemingly limitless on-demand options. This may have habituated them to expect the same from their childbearing experience.
That's the part that jumped out to me. Is just like where we're at culturally with technology and with the current generation, this is going to seem obvious.
Yeah. The deception, here's how the article ends. The deception promulgated by the new eugenicists is that they care only for the health and safety of all children, when in fact, they are trying to design better children for those who can afford them. And they deem irresponsible those who cannot. And those who react appropriately and viscerally with nauseated horror to a new world that is the very opposite of brave. Thoughts, Chris Hemmelman?
Where to begin? Yeah. This is another example of you read literature like Brave New World and people forget it was written as a warning, not a suggestion. And yet here we are.
Okay, let me just connect this to another article in First Things that makes this point. A battle has broken out on the American right. Two visions of what it means to have children are contending for supremacy. On one side stands the genetic determinist right, which celebrates people with good genes who have children together inside or outside of wedlock, ideally with the aid of embryo selection and genetic screening. On the other side is the culturalist right, which insists on the importance of marriage and monogamy. The outcome of this battle is more important than most people realize. It will determine which conception of human excellence will guide Western societies in the 21st century. I think this is really important. As Christians, we would be on the culturalist side, believing that marriage and monogamy are good, God-given things. And what we're up against is an increasingly techno-utopian vision of family that basically says, hey, you know what? To use the language of Noor Siddiqui in that article, sex is for fun, embryo screening is for babies. You know, like, sex is just what you do recreationally. And when you want to have a kid, you should, you know, do that using the best scientific processes, screen those embryos, discard the ones you don't want, use the IVF process to implant them. In fact, this article in First Things goes on to talk about Elon Musk, and sort of he is perhaps one of the sort of poster children for this vision of family. And he and one of his employees had a child together, but the way they did it was he donated his sperm. They used this polygenic genetic testing. They implanted an embryo in the woman. And so it's a really weird sort of techno, when you use the language of control, Dusty, it's a very sort of controlled and reproductively technologically advanced way of going at this. And my concern here, well, I have a number of concerns, but a primary one is it's money that's driving all of this. There are companies in Silicon Valley investing in this. And as you heard some of the marketing language there. Hey, don't you want to have a healthy baby? What if you could keep your kid from having a heart defect? Wouldn't that be the right thing to do? I am very, very concerned that the economic interests behind this do not have your best in mind and are not asking the question, what is the best for human flourishing, mm-hmm. but are basically asking, how can we make some money off of you by selling you the thing you probably want anyway, which is a healthy, thriving child?
Yeah. We're going to eliminate all of the risk, and we can do that with technology and a few dollars.
Yeah. And the thing is, in a lot of ways, this is just the logical outcome of how we view technology. When we spend so much time just taking it in, just using it, not questioning sort of where this is all heading. And so you get to this place where eventually this starts to make moral sense because we've been formed all the way back earlier. And that's the hard part, is we get to this place and this conversation shouldn't be as difficult as it is. But because of the way technology has so reshaped society, it is a much more difficult conversation in some ways. And so that, I think that's one of the things where the sort of the Overton window of what's acceptable, I think, has moved because of the way technology has formed us.
What's the Jurassic Park quote that's like, you...
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
That's what I think of here.
Bethany, I'm interested in your thoughts on this.
The first thing I noticed is like how much this preys on people's fear and people's like wanting to avoid pain and suffering of any kind. And like, so I think I'm less worried about it maybe becoming like a thing that's like really trendy to do, just to have like designer babies, which is kind of what it sounds like they're doing. But I'm more worried about people who just want, like, are actually just fearful of having a child with like severe medical problems or the potential of having a child that could have that, and wanting to avoid that altogether and thinking that this is a wise like move forward. And like, I want to say, I'm like, oh, I think people will be smart enough to see like, no, this is not what this is. This is really harmful and not great. But I don't know. I feel like people might begin to justify it after a little while. And that's where I, like, that's, as I'm reading it, that's what I was really like worried about.
Do you think, it sounds like you're saying on the one hand, you think there's going to be sort of a backlash again. There's going to be a number of people who say like, yeah, I'm not doing a designer baby. Like, this is a sort of a very longstanding natural human reality bearing children. So you think, it sounds like you're saying, you think there's going to be some segment of at least Christians who will say, yeah, we're not doing this, but right. You're saying there will be people who, out of fear, this becomes a concern to them of, should I be doing genetic testing, and
right. Because it sounds like you're caring for this child that doesn't even exist yet. You're showing them like, this is how I can show them love, is by eliminating suffering from their life. And I'm also just like, we're not even thinking about, okay, this child comes into the world and there's environmental factors, like they get into a terrible accident
right.
and they're in a wheelchair for the rest of their life, or parent dies or parents die and they aren't raised in like a home environment that we would say is like the best for them. Like yeah. there's all these other things that I'm just like, we're not, you're never going to be able to avoid pain yeah. and suffering completely.
Yeah. There's an ethical argument assumption being made that suffering diminishes the worth of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so eliminate suffering because you don't want to diminish your worth. And right. so,
well, I want to make one point in light of what you said, Bethany, which is that one thing Christians need to do is be very discerning about language. Mm-hmm. Because if you hear the marketing language there, it's language of don't you want the best for mm-hmm. your kid.
Mm-hmm.
But what that author points out is actually all they're doing is eliminating kids. They're yeah. not, they're not, yeah. it's not like they're making right. the kids that exist more healthy.
Right.
They're actually eliminating human beings. That's a, but the language that's being used is language of safety, flourishing. And so I think for Christians, we have to be very, very discerning hearers when we're being offered something at a doctor's office or at a fertility clinic or whatever. We have to ask, okay, what am I being offered here? And what is the actual thing that's being done? Mm-hmm. And how do I think about that ethically rather than just listening to the language that's being used and saying, well, that sounds good. Yeah, I don't want a kid with a heart defect or a kid who might have, you know, a retinal degenerative disease. And so, yeah, I mean, got to get through that initial language to ask the deeper mm-hmm. ethical questions. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, yeah, no. That, I mean, and that's the point there. Yeah, it's the trick of the language, because you know, if you kind of phrase it a little bit differently, or maybe you know, put it in a difficult kind of proposition of like, would you rather have a child with these things or no child at all? Is another. I mean, it's not the mm-hmm. exact same thing, but it kind of raises the question of like, is life valuable even with that hard, those hard difficulties. Like if I, you know, said, hey, Bethany, the Lord spoke to you and said, hey, the next child you have will have this defect. Would you then go, well, then I'm not going to have kids? Or would you say, no, it's still worth the life to have the child? And I think that's a, there's a wrestle there because you're mm-hmm. like, suffering is real and this is hard. And do you know, how do you work through those things? But it plays upon that dynamic of like, what, you know, suffering. Yeah, we don't want to suffer, but at what mm-hmm. cost will we pay to not have suffering?
I'm most interested in that comment about younger Americans have spent their lives saturated in technologically mediated worlds that promise seemingly limitless on-demand options. Obviously, this whole article raised my blood pressure to read, obviously. But I was thinking about just that saturation, and I was thinking, well, this is just the next Instagram filter in child making, yeah. if you will.
Yeah.
And so it also gets at trust in the Lord, risk elimination and control, like I said earlier. And obviously, if you haven't thought through these things, you're just going to sign up. Right? Because they're going to keep building and you're going to be like, hey, we can avoid some of these things if this is the next filter we could use. So it made me pastorally consider how we have to, and we've mentioned this before, go back to Imago Dei and creation just as much as we're talking about redemption. And I think we're going to have to do more and more of that in the church on our watch in the next couple of decades.
The interesting statement to me that stood out in the article that I think we've talked about before and certainly that our elders are thinking a lot about right now is this line from the Christine Rosen article, Siddiqui and her ilk are proposing a future in which sex is effectively decoupled from procreation. Well, that technically happened with the pill, right, or with artificial birth control in the 1930s, 40s, 50s. So we already live in a world and Christians are already sort of being shaped by a world where sex has kind of been decoupled from procreation. And only the most intentional and thoughtful churches and Christians are doing work to sort of reconnect those things. And so in a sense, that's that technology, right, began the decoupling. And so you can see how this is sort of just the end of a long trajectory where we're saying, well, okay, if, you know, once you decouple those things, then you have to keep asking the question, well, what else could we do? What else could we do? What else could we do?
Mm-hmm.
And to your joke about the Jurassic Park meme, right? The fact that we can do it, we didn't stop to ask, should we do it? And this is a place where I think you mentioned image of God, Imago Dei, creation. Yeah, I would just say like, yeah, our anthropology needs to start coming to play here. And the reason I want to keep talking about these things on this podcast is because I think most of the ethical questions in our world today don't feel ethical because they are downstream from technology. So they're not questions like, should I murder my neighbor? Like, they're not sort of 10 commandments level questions. They're questions of, well, we can do this. Mm-hmm. So what would keep us from it? Right. Just like think about AI with, you know, kids using AI to write papers. Well, we can do it and it's faster and easier. So should, like, these ethical questions that we're having to answer in every realm of our lives are downstream from the fact that we have technologies that make things possible. And so I think Christians need to get comfortable with starting to say, hey, most of our ethical questions that we've got to do good theological work in seem like actually technological questions. They just seem like, well, why wouldn't I do that, Dusty? If the doctor offers me the capacity to do genetic screening,
yeah,
why wouldn't I? And the answer is you wouldn't, because it's tinkering with life, and it's and what they're offering you is the capacity to selectively remove certain embryos and implant other ones, and that's a godlike decision. That's a making decision, not a creating decision.
And to give us a little bit more punch, you know, you back this up to the 1930s and the eugenics movement, which was highly racist because it saw that, you know, certain genetic defects existed in particular races. This is a much shinier, more glamorized, more modern version of this. But strip away the veneer, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is, again, making a judgment about certain types of people and their worth. And it's better that these people be eliminated than born, because we only want these types of people. So you can take away the racism, you can dress it up in shiny Instagram colors, but at its root, it's the same thing as the 1930s ugly eugenics movement. And so I think, again, there's place for, you know, carefulness of language, recognizing, hey, suffering is a real thing, but let's also not allow the gloss to cover just how dark this is.
Not to mention how much the church needs those kinds of people in them. Like, I have a blind aunt, and to this article's point, and sure, no, none of us would have wished blindness upon her, but it's definitely shaped our family in a very good and charitable way. Not to, you know, I don't want to, I guess I'll say it this way. I don't want to be a part of a church that doesn't have the ability to have a Down syndrome kid or a blind person or a handicapped person. That's what actually makes the church a very beautiful place. Now, of course, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, but that is what creates a diverse community.
Not just the church, but just human community in general.
Yeah, right.
I mean, a society that determines that such things are not welcome in society is a dangerous kind of society.
It is
eugenics in the most aggressive form. And but what's funny is, as you're saying, it's a dressed up version, Chris. It's a highly marketed slick version, and it does prey on fears that are already existing in people, right? Fears that people already have of, like, what if something's wrong with my child? And so if I can promise you, Bethany, I can guarantee, or I'm telling you that I can guarantee, that we can take that risk out of the equation, that's a pretty compelling sales pitch.
I think the fear that I kind of had while reading this is like thinking about the technology thing of it. I think that, I don't know if you guys want to go this
go
way.
For it.
I think that because of how much we see IVF, like people using it, continuing to use it, it's only going to like grow. And I think it'll just be literally, like, I could see this becoming a thing that's literally like you're filling out your paperwork and you check a box and you just decided to let a doctor run this genetic testing on your embryos, and they determine the ones that they'll tell you these are the good embryos and we got rid of the bad ones. And you like, it'll be something so simple like that you won't even, you won't actually even spend that much time thinking about it. You'll just check a box and move on with your life. And that's the thing that I think is really terrifying.
Yeah. It'll be just part of the process.
Right.
Well, and this is, this is a place where Christians need to have eyes wide open. And part of the reason we're doing this podcast is just so people know, hey, this is out there. So you should pay attention to where do you see this? How do you see this? Where is it coming to a clinic near you? I also want you to know that Silicon Valley is actively pressing these companies. There are multiple startups like Orchid Health in Silicon Valley that are doing genetic screening, artificial wombs, like the tech pronatalist movement is putting a lot of money behind the capacity to basically create a world where sex is for fun and embryo screening is for babies or artificial wombs or for where basically we can take all of the risk of maternity and the humanness of maternity and delete that risk or create ways of artificially replacing it. And I think that's a less human world. Yes. I think it's a dangerous world. And I think it's a world we don't want to allow to dominate our lives. And so as Christians, we're going to need to think intentionally about where do we need to become conscientious objectors. And part of my concern, as you're saying that, Bethany, is just like, yeah, the challenge, the reason I want, as a pastor, I want people thinking about this is because I don't want us to get so far downstream that it's just like, yeah, we just passively accepted a bunch of choices that were made for us that we didn't even know we were making an ethical decision because we're just checking a box on a form because it's become baked into the whole ethos. And I think the only way for that not to happen is for Christians to continue to go into medicine, for Christians to continue to start alternative health clinics and to, you know, for things like Catholic Charities to continue to give us good health clinics that do things that a lot of hospitals won't do right now. Mm-hmm. So there's going to need to be an alternative ecosystem here because I think the capitalist ecosystem is going to continue to go all in on technology and all in on the reduction or elimination of risk as they see it. Mm-hmm. And there's going to need to be a human counterweight to that, a human response to that Christians, I think, can lead the charge on. So I just want the knowledge to be out there that these companies exist, that this technology is gaining traction so that we can become the right kind of conscientious objectors, not anti-technology in a naive way, but very, very conscientious adopters of which technologies fit with a biblical framework and which ones don't. Well, as I said, we're going to do a few other podcasts on topics related to this year. There are some folks who have reached out to us via email who have had certain experiences with some genetic testing that I think you'll want to know about and maybe hear their stories. And so we're going to continue to talk about some of these reproductive technology conversations in weeks and months to come. For now, though, just wanted you to know about the push toward consumer eugenics and to at least be able to assess it and evaluate it from a Christian perspective. So I hope this podcast has helped at least get the conversation going in your mind. And again, let's not be freaked out or weirded out or reactive or defensive, but let's seek to be, as God's people, ethically proactive in how we are engaging the new and upcoming technologies related to this aspect of life.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thank you for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.